Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode number 210, Rogue One Pre-Show. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Galen Erso, to my director, Krennic. The power of dealing with you is incredible. We have Carl Eclair.
Jason, everything I do it to protect you, so you understand.
I understand.
Jason, in approximately 4.5 hours, wait, my math's horrible, 5.5 hours, I will be sitting down to Rogue One.
Oh, man. It'll be 7.5 hours for me.
I'm going to text you how it ends right as you're going in.
You better.
I'm just kidding.
If you do, I will unfriend you and this podcast will cease to exist.
That'd be pretty mean.
Until tomorrow.
When you decide you actually do want to talk about it again.
Exactly.
So, folks, all we plan on doing today is just talking about what we kind of are hoping for in Rogue One, all the speculations that have kind of come to the surface. Jason, I counted, I didn't count, it was done for us, but apparently there has been 36 TV spots for Rogue One. 36!
I've seen three of them.
That's outrageous. It's a little overkill. I think that's putting Force Awakens to shame.
Probably.
But I also have a few
in the last week.
True. I do have a feeling, though, that maybe they're trying to hit this a little bit harder as it gets closer for the casual fan or just the typical moviegoer who might be still lost in this world of like, wait, is this the prequel to episode 7 or the sequel? I mean, excuse me.
Right.
So, but
is this episode 8? Where's Rey and Finn?
Where are Rey and Finn? Well, who's this new person? I'm not Daisy Ridley.
Who's this? Who is this Jin? Is that how you say it?
Jane?
Who's Jane?
Jane Erso.
Yes, no. She is not Daisy Ridley. We did get that public service announcement thanks to MTV, right? MTV, I think.
I think it was MTV, yeah. But, anyway, I got to say this real quick because we have obviously quite a few friends in the Star Wars community, specifically the podcasting world.
Mm-hmm.
I feel kind of jealous that some of our friends have already seen it.
I know.
Like Riley saw it. Riley Blanton from Star Wars Report. Teresa Delgado saw it from all sorts of podcasts.
let's see, about half the podcasts.
Yeah, I know it.
Right now? No, I'm just kidding.
I guess that's the only two that are jumping out right now. I know like Mark Newbold from Jedi News saw it, but he's also in England where it premiered earlier.
Right.
Our friend Jazz has already seen it like 2 or 3 times, but that's, well, I remember
seeing, I think it's like 4 or 5 already at this point.
When I saw Force Awakens with that huge group down in New York last year, Jazz flew over to go with us and Jazz had already seen it, I think 4 or 5 times.
So holy crap.
It was crazy.
Jazz, you're an insane man, but we love you anyways.
But I was feeling really, I was like, oh man, what do we got to do to get like early screening stuff? But
Another Star Wars Report podcaster, William Devereaux, who does the Ion Cannon podcast, was at the red carpet premiere and
so cool.
With I think Aaron Goins might have been there too.
Aaron was there too, I think. Yeah.
And, you know, so they had their spoiler-free review out like 3 days ago, and I'm just like,
What?
Why don't I get in on this action?
But I will say, I'd be hard-pressed to keep my mouth shut. Not because I want to spoil it for anybody, but just because I do think it's nice that come, like, you know, midnight tonight, I feel like I can at least talk to the vast majority of my Star Wars friend community about this movie without having to worry about them not having seen it.
Exactly.
Maybe it's wise that they decided to not extend an invitation to the Wampa's Lair.
Yeah.
If they wanted to keep it a secret.
Loose lips sink. Loose lips sink Ewings.
Or Death Stars.
Ooh.
Oh man.
But I'm so excited for this movie, and I've read a few reviews, but it's so funny, Jason. You know how like I was all about the spoilers for Force Awakens. I read any and everything. I was pretty clear on what the entire plot was going to be moving into the movie, and there were very few surprises from what the spoilers I had read before. And for me, that doesn't downplay how awesome the movie was. I was like that all through the prequels. What's funny though is there's been very little spoilers for Rogue One. I mean, we all know the general. I mean, we all know how the movie's going to end, but that's not what the movie's selling point is, really. If you think about it, the movie's selling point is who are these characters? What's their dynamic? How do they all, you know, what is their fate essentially? And I don't know a darn thing. And at this point, when this week started, you know, I said to myself, even if like all of them come out, all the spoilers come out, I don't want to know anything. Cause being this close, it's like, since I don't know now, I don't want to know now. And I started reading obviously all the reviews out right now are supposed to be spoiler free, but I was reading one the other day and there was just like a tiny bit of info. It wasn't quite a spoiler, but I was like, no, I don't even want to know that. So I just like closed my computer and I was like, you know what? I'm done. I don't want to read anything. And just now I turned on Riley did like a very short YouTube video from his screening last night. And he started saying stuff that made me excited. But then I was like, nope, you're giving me too much, Riley. So I turned it off. I don't want to know anything at this point.
Well, we're this close to it. We're this close to it. And it's like, well, let's just not bother with that anymore. But of course, you know, that's my reaction to it pretty much the entire time. Although I will say I've read like two, maybe three reviews of it. I did read William Devereaux's because that was, you know, out for Star Wars Report Network. But there was one or two others I saw. And I've seen, of course, a bunch of headlines for reviews saying, oh, it's amazing. And then, of course, there's like three people out there that are going, this is terrible because they hate Star Wars and they have no soul.
But, well, it's those typical pretentious sources that probably, you know, hated all the Star Wars movies back in the day. And it's important to remember that seven of these Star Wars movies in some way, shape or form has gotten negative reviews. So that's not surprising.
Right.
You know, I don't even want to say anything. And there were a few things. I did read the New Yorker's review because I knew that was they did not like it. So I started reading it. And it was, you know, it was fine. And what they were pointing out that they didn't like is apparently that there's a lot of the dialogue they didn't care for. And I have a feeling. Like,
well, have you watched any of the other seven
Wars movies? It's not really about the dialogue a lot of the times, and it's kind of a big space opera where it kind of, you know, it's meant to kind of have some sort of bombastic dialogue. You know, I mean, it's not meant to be completely real life in real world. So when I read that, I was like, you know what, I'm okay with that.
Oh my gosh, the dialogue wasn't quite on point. No, really, it's Star Wars.
Right.
There's going to be clunky, awkward dialogue like what Leia says about Supreme Leader Snoke and how awkward that was.
No, it was Force Snoke Awakened. Who turned him to the dark side.
Exactly. Yeah. That was the line.
Who says that? Yeah. Come on.
Right, exactly. And, you know, like Mark Hamill says when he was auditioning, you know, he had to talk about, you know, security systems in Aquilae or Sullis, but those are more likely geared towards a large scale assault. And he's like, who talks like this? So I just tried to say it sincerely, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
I will say though, and, apparently though, there are some pump up scenes in this film, which doesn't surprise me. Just so from the trailer, right? Like when Cassian says to Jin, make 10 men feel like 100, You know she's probably, and you know they're all boarding onto the U-wing probably to head off to Scarif. I have a feeling that she's going to give a pretty dope speech that's going to like get your blood going and potentially like jerk your tears. And I hear that Chirrut has some really like heartstring pulling moments.
William Devereaux says that K2SO and Chiru steal the show. So
nice,
which I expected, but I love hearing that. I did see on Facebook today. I follow Tom Kane, the voice actor of Yoda in the Clone Wars, and he's apparently got a couple of minor voiceover parts in the film. And he posted a picture today of like he and his and some kids that are going to go see the movie. And he said, this is the best Star Wars movie since The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, we heard that for Force Awakens, though, too. So
we did.
I'm wary.
Anthony Daniels said that.
Right. You know, the thing is, I learned a lesson last year, Jason, and it's called don't make such strong opinions so quickly. I mean, when I came home from Force Awakens the first couple of times, to me it was barely second to Empire. But now after a year, I still love Force Awakens, but it is settled comfortably into the middle of my lineup at this point.
Right.
I prefer some of the prequels to Force Awakens. I think they're better Star Wars films. But that's a discussion for another day.
Right.
But I think Force Awakens is probably a better film than most of the prequels in like a modern sense. For like the modern viewer, I think, yes, they would say Force Awakens is 10 times better than the prequels. But when to me, what makes Star Wars Star Wars, which again is a completely subjective characteristic to say what is my story. I was actually just talking to my friend Greg about this last night, and we were talking about like he, you know, for him, he's like, well, there's 10 characteristics that make up a good Star Wars film. And he listed all these great characteristics. And he's like, if a movie has like 8 out of 10 of these, I consider it a great one. If, you know, one of them has 5 out of 10, it's not going to be as one of my favorite Star Wars films. But I think that's a good way, you know, for each of us, what we want in a Star Wars film is going to be unique to each individual. And I think Force Awakens had a ton of the stuff that makes Star Wars great, but it was missing a lot of the stuff that makes Star Wars great. Whereas the prequels had a ton of stuff that makes prequels great, and there's a few things that a couple of them are missing. But I think Rogue One, though, from the sounds of things, is going to change a lot of that, though. You know, I think a lot of those characteristics that I'm thinking of are very open-ended anyway, so there's no there's no reason Rogue One can't fit into those categories. But I just think Rogue One is going to be a uniquely different Star Wars film.
Right. And we have to realize that going into it. We can't just expect this to be like, you know, A New Hope or like Return of the Jedi or Phantom Menace. Or it can't be like any of the other films. It's uniquely different, not only in its approach and the fact that it's kind of like, hey, let's bring one of these side stories that would have been saved for a book or something to life on the big screen. You know, not only is it like that, but it does not have to, you know, beholden itself to the larger Skywalker saga that we're getting with the saga movies. So we can explore characters that have nothing to do with the Skywalkers if they so choose to do so. And with the freedom of it being a standalone movie, they don't have to follow some of the sort of guidelines that the saga films follow in the way that they're set up, in the ways that they might be shot, you know, and that sort of thing. You know, that this has the freedom to experiment and do something new, which I'm really curious to see what they're doing. And apparently, some of what they did is they had sets that they could stick a camera in that was a 360-degree camera, and they filmed these scenes from all angles, and so people were acting the entire time in the scene, no matter where on set they were. They couldn't just run off camera and then, you know, stand by and watch the rest of the scene play out. So that's, you know, there's new technology, and I think that's kind of the first time a movie's been shot like that before. So,
let's take a second and talk about planets. I think we're gonna, you know, so every Star Wars film is, what a weird transition, by the way. I don't know how to transition it, but it's just what I want to talk about next. So,
yeah. Well, here, I think we've completely missed the fact that we have a poll.
Oh man, yeah, 15 minutes in and we forgot our poll. I'm sorry, everybody. Jason, we did ask. That's right. We had a poll from last episode where we asked you all, what is the one thing you really want to see, or the one thing you have to see in Rogue One? And
yes, And then we'll get to your planets.
Yes. Sorry about that, everybody.
No worries. There is a ton of responses because everybody wants something different, basically. and so in fourth place with one vote each, get ready, we have Palpatine, Links to the Jedi, Jar Jar Binks, although that may have been tongue-in-cheek, Cool Battles, Mandalorians, Star Wars themes, as in the music, Gold Leader, and this was written a couple days ago, but somebody gave us the 27 TV spots and 3 full clips from the movie that have been out that far. Now it's more, right? You said 36?
Yeah, that's the TV number spots I saw the other day, yeah.
Jeepers creepers. All right. In third place with 2 votes each, Leia on the Tantive IV, perhaps. Tarkin, Everything. Somebody wrote in Everything, and I put my vote there because I had no idea what I want to see, so I just said Everything. Gritty Combat, The Ghost, or The Ghost Crew, and Clone Wars reference, especially since we've got Saw Gerrera in there. In second place with 3 votes was Return of the Jedi level dogfights, mm-hmm. Which I can get behind. Mm-hmm. But far and away with 9 votes in first place, Darth Vader.
Yes.
Doing Darth Vader-ly things. And that's where your vote went, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I want to see Vader wreak some havoc. I want to see him do some damage. Cut some people up. But I think we talked about this on our last show, or on one of the mini episodes, but I don't know how much of Vader we're going to see as far as action goes.
Right.
I could see, I know he's going to do at least, he's going to kill at least somebody. Because that one trailer, right, when he's turning around with his fingers like that, like that's clearly a force choke move. So he's going to kill somebody.
Yeah, that's him turning around, either just getting ready to force choke, or like he's just finished force choking someone and he's turning back towards the camera to stalk away through the mist.
Apology accepted, Captain Nita.
Apology accepted, Director Krennic.
Yeah, that's my guess. I mean, again, I don't know any spoilers, so if I'm right about this, don't yell at me. But I do think he'll kill Krennic.
The likelihood of that happening is pretty high. Well,
sadly, they kind of gave it away. Like with the trailer shots, the TV spots the way they are, like him walking towards Krennic in the one shot, and then that shot of him turning with his fingers is the exact same place. So there's a pretty good bet he's going to be displeased with Krennic.
Yeah. But
I will say
Krennic is not getting out of this movie.
Yeah. I'll say I finished Catalyst 2 days ago.
Okay.
It's funny. So I was talking to my friend Greg, who absolutely loved it and let me borrow the book. I told Greg, I was like, I give it a 6 out of 10, maybe 5.5 out of 10. It's not my favorite type of Star Wars. It's really slow. It's a really slow read. That being said, I'm super glad I read it before Rogue One.
Okay.
Because I really think it's going to enhance specifically Galen and Krennic and Galen's wife. Like, it does a great job of explaining the dynamic between these characters, describing the early dynamic between Krennic and Tarkin. We see a lot. I don't want to say much more. Sorry. I don't want to spoil anything. But there's not.
Well, here, folks. I need to know some of this because I'm not going to be able to read Catalyst before I see the movie in 7 hours. So if you don't want any Catalyst spoilers, fast forward about 3 to 5 minutes, and we'll be back talking about Carl's planets. Go, Carl.
3 to 5 minutes. It probably won't take me that long, but it's cool because in Catalyst we do – so here's a – sorry for a minor spoiler, but Geonosis. They do start building the Death Star around Geonosis, which is great. I love that they bring that back. Krennic basically gets Poggle the Lesser to help him get Geonosian workers too. So it's really cool seeing that prequel character in the novel. And you know how there's obviously Geonosis is a ring planet?
Right.
Not anymore, because they use all the asteroids for material to make the Death Star. It's pretty cool. Like, so this book is good insofar as it gives a lot of cool background information that's clearly going to influence how you see Rogue One. That being said, if you're satisfied with Rogue One and you don't like slow moving Star Wars stuff, don't read this book. The only reason I plugged through it the whole way is because I really wanted to finish it before Rogue One. That's my opinion. And from what I've gathered, there has been very mixed reviews. Like, some people have loved it, some people have hated it. I'm right in the middle. Like, I neither loved nor hated it. It was like a really slow burn. The very ending is really good. The way the book ends was awesome. And the way the book began was awesome, but the majority of the middle is really slow. And it's like, it's typical James Luceno writing. It's like these long descriptions, this long, it's almost like historical background. So if that's the type of Star Wars you like, you're going to love it. There's a lot of macro stuff, Jason. You might really enjoy this book.
Yeah. So there's a lot of the, Lucenopedia at work in this book.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So again, to me, the fact that it works so well is because it really works as a prequel to Rogue One. I have a feeling. I think that there's a few things I know in the movie tonight I'm going to appreciate more because of Catalyst. And it does do a really cool job of bringing some of the prequel stuff forward. For instance, one of the big things that I constantly showcase is how devastating the Clone War was to the entire galaxy. And I like that. You know, it shows, mm-hmm. It shows why, you know, maybe there is such a resistance to go to war with the Empire right away, because the Clone Wars really messed up the galaxy. You really got a sense in Catalyst of just how, you know, grand sweeping that war was. It starts during the Clone Wars. And Order 66 happens during the book. You don't see anything with the Jedi, but, okay. Yeah. Do you want another little quick spoiler?
Yes.
All right. So just mute for like 10 seconds. If you don't want the spoiler, say it quick. Galen and his wife and Jin are on the run on a planet that is being like invaded by separatists, and they're like caught and like they're about to be captured, and all of a sudden the battle droids just shut off. So you know that like Order 66 happened, or no, you know that the Clone War ended, like Anakin just shut down the droids. So that was like kind of cool to see, like Galen's about to get shot and then all of a sudden the droids just shut down. It's really cool.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a cool moment. It was the most and probably only action-packed scene in the entire book, but the rest of the book is pretty slow. So,
gotcha.
But again, it's really cool. Like for those of you who love that aspect of Star Wars, where like you want to know the background, you want to know like kind of the history, you want to know what it was like for the Empire to establish itself, this is the book for you, for sure. So it's just, when I read a Star Wars book, I want it to move kind of quickly. This moved very slowly. So that's all. That's my main complaint. It's not that it's a bad book. It's just not my favorite type of Star Wars book. So, like, comparing it to Ahsoka, which is the most recent read before that. Ahsoka, I mean, granted, it's also YA, but, you know, that book moved so well. It was full of fun and action. You got a lot of Force stuff in there. You do get some really cool Force stuff, though, I will say, in Catalyst. And you get a lot of cool stuff about Kyber crystals. So, but...
Cool.
Catalyst is more of a political... empire building book than anything else. So if that stuff you're interested in, you will love that book. If that sort of stuff bores the hell out of you, you will not like that book. So
good to know.
But all anyway. Right.
But anyway, story time with Carl is over. So I almost called you Carlo.
I know.
As in like Carlo Ren. You had planets we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about these planets that we're going to see in Rogue One. So,
okay.
Typically, a Star Wars movie has, what, three planets or at least three locations, right? Like, even Force Awakens, we had Jakku, Octu. Oh, my gosh. I always forget the name of the planet that the...
it's in the Illenium system. It's,
yes, I always forget the name of where the Resistance base is.
Yeah, I forget the exact name of the planet, but it's in the Illenium system.
Right. Actually, no, Force Awakens is more than three. That's right, because we also have Takodana. So there's quite a few planets.
Right.
But anyway, whatever. It looks like, from what we've gotten on the trailers, that we're going to have, I think, four planets in Rogue One. I mean, we're going to see Yavin 4. We're going to see Jeddah. We're going to see Iyadu, which I think is the planet where she is imprisoned. And Scarif. I think those are the four planets we're going to see. I don't think there'll be any others, but I could be wrong. Oh, well, whatever okay. whatever the planet is. Well, actually, I know because of Catalyst what planet they're on in the flashback scene. So, because Catalyst ends with them going there. Oh, man, that's a spoiler too. Gotcha. Son of a gun. I'm so sorry. I forgot to say spoiler before I said it. I'm such a jerk. I don't know. Oh, man. But then again, if come on, you gotta know where that's going with the book. Oh man, I feel like I'm a jerk.
Right.
So anyway.
But yeah, we've got four or five planets that we'll see. I'm most interested in seeing Scarif.
Yeah.
Because it's either a planet that we haven't already seen before or we haven't seen something like it. Jeddah is cool to me from more of a cultural perspective rather than anything else, because it's kind of another desert planet, but it's got this Jedi lore and these force followers that are there, and that, it's sort of like the Mecca or the Jerusalem, so to speak, of the Star Wars universe, which is fascinating to me, and I'd love to find out more about that, but we probably won't get too many details about that specifically in the movie. But Scarif is the planet that has me most intrigued, because we have not seen something like that in Star Wars before.
Yeah, I'm of the same opinion, Jason. I think Jeddah is the one that I'm most intrigued by as far as backstory goes, because of that kind of Force pilgrimage site. I think that's so cool that that's such a strong, clear tie to even so many of our own world religions. So I'm really intrigued by that. But again, you're right. There's nothing about its look that's unique. Scarif is the most unique looking planet we've seen, I think, ever in Star Wars. Because there was nothing that unique looking in Force Awakens. Takadana a little bit, but it just looked like Earth, so that's not necessarily a good thing. even Endor looked more alien than Takadana to me.
Those redwoods.
Yeah, man, those are otherworldly. So cool. But awesome. I think Jeddah is it's the planet I'm going to want to know most about. And I think, like you said, Jason, I feel like we'll get a lot more unpacked about Jeddah in the future, whether it's through comics or novels or even another standalone.
Right.
But yeah, Scarif, like just that shot of the stormtroopers walking on like that beautiful beach. It's almost a shock to your system, because it's like, that's stormtroopers don't go there. No, that doesn't make sense. Plastic and water. No.
Are we going to start seeing Lego stormtroopers in Speedos?
Oh man.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah,
I played too many of the Lego Star Wars games.
Scarif looks so cool, and I love. I mean, I'm the reason I'm thinking about re-upping my PlayStation Plus account is just so I can order the Scarif DLC, because that planet looks so fun to play on.
I haven't played it much since we talked about it for one of our mini episodes, unfortunately, because I've been working since then. But it's fun. It looks pretty cool. I haven't had a chance to really like take it all in, because I'm running around trying not to get shot like every 2 seconds.
Yeah.
But it's pretty good. It looks pretty cool. And the thing that's really intriguing is that shield generator station above Scarif that they have to get through.
Yeah.
So just the fact that, not only is Scarif this, almost paradise of a world that is marred by the fact that it's got the Imperials on it, it's also you kind of blockaded off. You're not allowed in. It's a paradise that nobody can get to unless you have some sort of Imperial crest on your uniform somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it seems like that's where, everything, that's where the final act will take place, is on Scarif.
Right. Right.
But yeah, I think the biggest standout and the thing that I'm most excited to see tonight when I see this movie is the characters. I mean, when the movie was first announced, I think both of us, Jason, were kind of equally a little blasé about it. Like, okay, this will be cool, but whatever. But obviously in the past few months, our hype has drastically increased.
Yes.
I think that, you know, the characters are what I'm most intrigued about. Like, you know, I really can't wait to feel or hear more about Jin. Cassian, like, he looks great. Definitely still, and this has never changed, Chirrut is still, like, the character I want to know the most about.
Yes.
But I'm also really interested in Baze as a result, because Baze is kind of his right. counterbalance, right? It seems like Chirrut is this kind of, like, faithful blind monk, and Baze is kind of just, like, this tough brawler who's good with a gun, and he doesn't necessarily have, like, that deep faith and conviction that Chirrut does. So I think their relationship will be really interesting to watch.
Yeah. You almost shot me. You're welcome.
Bodhi Rook. You know, I honestly, yeah. I didn't really care about his character until most recently. And I think actually the main reason for that is Riz Ahmed. Is that the actor's name playing him?
Yes.
He's awesome. Like, he's such a cool guy. Like, just listening to him talk about the character has made me intrigued about the character. Also, him doing that freestyle rap on Jimmy Fallon sold me. If you haven't seen that yet, even if you don't like Jimmy Fallon, he makes Riz Ahmed, it goes on and does a freestyle rap, and he has to use 3 Star Wars words in the freestyle. And it's so good. Like, he's a really good freestyle rapper.
I need to go find that then.
Yeah, it's so funny. But yeah, like, then in one of the recent featurettes, or no, this was on the Star Wars show where they're interviewing all of the main cast. And, you know, they all get the question of, like, what was it like to be filmed in a Star Wars movie? And Riz Ahmed just turns to the camera and goes, it sucked. It was so funny. You know, he's obviously joking, but obviously he knows everybody right. else's reaction is going to be like, oh, it's so amazing, blah, blah, blah. And he just goes, it sucked.
Right.
I was laughing so hard. So, you know, I'm really excited to see more about his character. Obviously, we've all heard K2SO kind of steals the show, but even Krennic.
Right.
Krennic sounds awesome. Krennic is a new type of Imperial. He is the blue collar guy who's trying to make a name for himself. You know, he's not yeah. the Tarkin. He's not the Vader. He's not the Emperor. Like, he's a high ranking Imperial official who's kind of worked his way up there. He's the everyday man in the Empire, which is never something we've had before. You know, we've had the everyday hero, but we've never had a everyday villain. So it's just really interesting what his character is going to be like.
Right. Yeah, he's the type of guy who, you know, lives a life similar to the stormtroopers in that he gets up, brushes his teeth in the morning, has some breakfast, you know, bantha bacon or something like that, and, you know, puts on his uniform, goes to work, does his job, and then goes back home. At the end of the day, although with this Death Star project, you get the idea that he's having delusions of grandeur or maybe dreams of power. And that's probably what motivates him throughout a lot of the movie from what we're gathering so far.
Yeah. Well, again, to go back to Catalyst, you get a lot of where his motives come from in Catalyst. And my guess is we're going to see at least some of those on the screen, too. I mean, in order, you can't make a movie and then depend on some book to do a lot of your, you know, background. You've got to still give good character development in the film for it to be successful on camera. So I'm sure we'll get a lot of that on camera. But I will say Catalyst does a good job of telling you where Krennic came from and what kind of his motivation is.
Now, one of the things is, since this is very much an ensemble cast and there's not, you know, and there's a bunch of these, you know, major players in the movie, you know, there's not going to be a ton of time for a lot of in-depth, you know, character study on, you know, more than like probably Jin. So we're going to get, you know, hints to backgrounds and stuff. So you got to, you know, kind of expect, you know, we're not going to get a full background as why Chirrut is blind and why he's following the ways of the Jedi and, you know, the ways of the Force here and all this stuff. And, you know, we might get how Chirrut and Baze met, but, you know, maybe not much more than that.
They probably went to a Star Wars convention in Dallas.
Right.
And it just became fast friends.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, what's interesting though, Jason, is I will say one of the things that the New Yorker said they didn't like about the dialogue was at points there was too much exposition, which to me as a Star Wars fan, I'm like, that's great. That means they're going to be explaining to us some of that backstory. Or, you know, they're going to flush some of this stuff out. So I like that idea. But also, let's not forget how important it is to the Star Wars mythos that everything not be explained, right? I mean, that's part of what makes Star Wars so great. You know, I mean, that's why you have books like Tales of Jabba's Palace, Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina. You know, that's where you... That's the great thing about Star Wars is we're always being introduced to a bigger universe. Just when you think you know everything, oh, here's a new movie and all these new things. You know nothing, Jon Snow. You know, like, that's, to me, that'll be a good thing in this film.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I'm... While I am looking for this movie to, you know, tell an awesome story about how the Rebels got the plans to the Death Star, I'm not expecting it to tell me everything about, you know, how those plans got to be there. I'm not expecting it to tell me everything about the characters involved, because I want jumping off points so that if I, you know, so desire, I can... dig more deeply into these characters at, you know, in other mediums. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where just, you know, the thought has crossed my mind once or twice that we might start seeing some Rogue One characters show up in Rebels. Mm-hmm. Because we're at the mid-season break right now. And I don't know. I feel like we might start seeing characters like Cassian show up in Rebels. Yeah. I don't think we'll see Jyn. I don't think we'll see many of the others. But I think someone like a Cassian may show up, or we may see a Director Krennic, or a mention to Galen Erso by Thrawn or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
you would think Grand Admiral Thrawn would be at least aware of the Death Star project, even if he's not involved, yeah. Right?
Exactly. And we do know, slight spoiler, folks, but there is a shot in a lot of these TV spots where we see a ship that is the same model of the Ghost from Rebels there with the Rebel fleet.
Yeah. There is clearly a VCX-100 in that fleet. Mm-hmm. So whether that's piloted by one of the crew of the Ghost, or it's just they're all dead and somebody else that got the ship, we don't know. My guess is it's the Ghost. I mean, we've never seen a VCX-100 in that universe before. Why all of a sudden would there be one?
Right.
I sincerely believe that it's the Ghost. Whether or not, again, it's piloted by anybody from Rebels, I don't think we'll see who's piloting it in the movie. I think, if anything, it's just going to be in there. It's participating in this engagement. Doesn't mean that we're going to see who's flying it.
And then maybe we'll get the crew of the Ghost side of that story next season in Rebels or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I really do still think, obviously this isn't Rogue One, but I think Rebels will wrap up after one more season. Like, I think they'll finish this season and then do one more season. That'll be it.
I think so. The way things are going, and the closer that they get to A New Hope, I feel shortens the amount of time that's left for the show.
Yeah.
Because I don't see the show following these characters past A New Hope, just due to the way the show is going.
Yeah,
not that it couldn't. If the characters survive through that, they could definitely continue the show. But I just think the story that they're trying to tell is to get this rebel cell to the point where A New Hope happens.
Right.
So,
well, here's
I think that's kind of the end game for Rebels.
Here's a question. Do you think we might hear Wedge's name mentioned in the space battle that we get in Rogue One?
Maybe.
Yeah, because it just makes me wonder, right? Like, if this is probably the whole of the Rebel fleet showing up to help whoever's got the plans escape, right? Like, they need covering fire, so the fleet shows up. The fleet knows they can't, like, kind of win the day. Well, no. According to the opening crawl of A New Hope, the Rebel Alliance has just won their first space battle.
Their first major victory against the Galactic Empire.
Right.
Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base won their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire.
Right. So this is said battle, I would assume. So they win.
I would assume.
But I think they're going to get beat up pretty good.
Right. You might see a Wedge or hear a Wedge. You might hear or see a Biggs. I believe I heard a while back in one of the trailers, someone thought they saw Porkins.
Oh, I'd love to see Porkins.
On Yavin. So, you know, you've got room to put some of these characters in, and it's right there. You know, we're going to see Dodonna. You know, we're going to see Bail Organa. We've already seen that in the trailers. So, you know, there's a lot of these things that we could see. Whether or not they'll have anything really to do in the movie remains to be seen. But, you know, I'm excited. I'm super excited.
I am too.
And I've got just under 7 hours before I can see this movie.
Just under five.
I hate you so much.
Oh, I'm so excited. I love being on Eastern time. Although it'll be pitch dark in the next 2 hours too. But and it's so funny is if anybody's listening to this after seeing the movie, everything we're guessing about, you're gonna be like, true, false.
Right. So,
but maybe kind of like final thoughts here, but do you think we'll see the Tana 4 at the end of the movie? Do you think we might have a closing shot with the Tana 4 flying off or something, maybe in pursuit, you know, maybe the Devastator pursuing it, maybe not, but do you think we'll see Tana 4 in this?
I don't know if we'll see something like that, but I do think we'll see the Tana 4.
Yeah.
I think there, you have to have that sort of direct connection. And speaking of connections, one of the headlines, one of the things I've seen in some of these reviews is that this movie connects so many aspects of Star Wars, you know, OT, PT, Clone Wars, Rebels, and maybe even the sequel trilogy too. But, you know, it connects so many different aspects of Star Wars in this movie. So look for a lot of Easter eggs. Look for a lot of cameos. I'm super excited. I think we'll have to see the Tana 4 at some point, some way during this movie. Maybe after the Battle of Scarif, Leia is, you know, the Tana 4 is there. Plans get transferred to, you know, get the plans get beamed to the Tana 4, and she takes off for Tatooine to get Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah. It's just so cool that this is like, it's just going to be such a great setup movie to the original trilogy. It's going to be so great, but it's going to be such a different type of film. I'm excited. I'm really, really, really excited.
Me too.
And
oh my gosh.
By the way, I heard some folks talking about this because I think Anthony Daniels was he at the red carpet premiere? I can't remember. But
I haven't seen anything.
Interviewed
from
him recently and just said, you know, this is potentially the first Star Wars movie you're not in, right? He's been in every Star Wars film.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of seemed to say like, yep, that's true. I'm not in this one. But I'll be honest, I'd love to see 3PO even just for a second. To have that consistency. I think it'd be great because you can put him in this film. That's the difference, right? It's not that he can't be in this movie.
Yeah.
He and R2 are on the Tanta 4. So if the Tanta 4 is featured there, I mean, even if they're just in the background, I think you could easily get the two of them in there.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. But if you're showing the inside of the Tanta 4 in any way, you can't do that without having a quick glimpse of R2 and 3PO.
Yeah.
I mean, I really feel like if you're going to be, you know, you may not get inside the Tanta 4 at all in this movie. It could be just communications, you know, outside of it and all that stuff. But if you're showing the interior of the Tana 4 at all, you have to put R2 and 3PO in there. It makes sense. And it's one of those touchstones that is going to get people excited.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
And when I say people excited, I mean, you know, people like me, because they're kind of my favorite characters ever. And you have to do that. Otherwise, I'm going to quit Star Wars forever.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lie.
yeah, I just think, again, I think it would just be such a cool little nod, a nice little homage to just see them, even in the background.
Right. Right.
But
as we're talking about R2 and 3PO maybe showing up in this movie, I'm messing around with my 6-inch R2 and the Walgreens exclusive 6-inch C-3PO with the gold arm.
Oh, good.
So
good.
I didn't want the one with the red arm. I got the one with the gold arm. So
oh yeah, I should.
I found him like last week.
I should go to Walgreens because I'd like to get that one too. I've seen the one with the red arm once so far in Target, but I have no interest in it.
Yeah.
But I'm just ready to be blown away tonight. That's the thing.
Me too.
I think it's hard to have any specific expectations.
Right.
I guess my only expectation is to be thoroughly entertained.
Yes. Yes. And I think it's dangerous to have any specific expectations too.
Right. Well, that was the plight of the prequels.
Exactly.
You know, specifically the older fans, specifically the fans who grew up with the original trilogy. They went into that already knowing what they wanted to see and how they wanted to see it. And when they didn't see what they wanted and expected, they weren't pleased. And that's not all of them for sure, but those who decided that they sucked, they decided that because it wasn't what their preconceived notions of it was.
Right.
And I think, you know, we even saw that with Force Awakens, right? Like some of the naysayers for Force Awakens were like, I don't like this. It's just, you know, it's a rehash of Episode 4. It's, you know, it's here's what's wrong and this is wrong and that's wrong. And again, it's because and
it's not the Thrawn trilogy.
Right. It's not the Thrawn trilogy. And, you know, yeah. So I just think, you know, this is another time in Star Wars fandom where this is another new element for Star Wars, right? Force Awakens was the first of a new trilogy. Phantom Menace, first of a new trilogy. Rogue One, first of a whole new franchise of Star Wars film. So we really can't know what to expect, but the one thing we can expect, because they've been consistently hammering this home for us, is it's a different type of Star Wars film. And I'm okay with that. Like, I'm excited about that. Like, obviously they've compared it to like a World War II action film. That's what, you know, that's the language I've heard repeated time and time again. And it seems like that's kind of the neat thing of these standalones. They're going to maybe fit into particular different genres of the action world. You know, for instance, we've heard talks that the Han Solo movie is going to be like a heist film. So I just think that's really cool. But I will say, I think Rogue One still has one scene, and I know I talked about this during one of the trailers, but the scene when Galen, you know, the Death Troopers and Krennic show up at Galen's, it looks like something straight out of a Western.
Yeah, it really does look a bit like a Western. And like a classic Western, like a Clint Eastwood sort of thing. But that's, you know, at the same time, that's not necessarily new to Star Wars, because, you know, it's been called a Western in space before, you know, even back as far as the 70s are concerned. So it's – Star Wars has a lot of elements already in it that, you know, take inspiration from different types of movies. I'm just so excited about this because and especially with things like Clone Wars and now Rebels, and we're seeing different ideas, different types of stories being told in those TV shows. It's exciting because I totally lost my train of thought, but I'm just super excited about what we're going to see. I just want to see this movie. I'm losing my train of thought. I'm trying to think of what's going on, what might happen. But it's just, I'm looking forward to more of a wartime movie with this one. I mean, it's Star Wars. Yes, we've seen wars, we've seen battles, but, you know, something along the lines of a World War II docudrama kind of thing would be really cool to see. And then the Han Solo movie, while it's a heist movie, it's probably going to be a pretty funny movie too. That being said, all Star Wars is humor, and it looks like this movie is going to have some humor of its own. And they've really been building up this whole hope thing in a lot of the trailers and TV spots recently. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what sort of a role that plays. Because while I think it's going to be a grittier movie, I don't think it's going to be a darker Star Wars movie, if that makes sense.
I do think it's going to be darker than what we're used to, in the sense of, and again, I've said this a lot while we're talking about the trailers, the sense of danger and threat that we're getting presented by the Empire in this movie is very different. I think there's going to be something slightly scary, not horror film scary, but something very intimidating about the Empire and what it's capable of and mm-hmm. what they're willing to do, you know, without thinking of who they hurt. I think that's going to give us a new sense of why the Empire is so darn scary.
Right.
And again, I think this is kind of an advantage. If you are on our Facebook, you probably saw the last couple of nights I've been posting pictures. I watched the prequel trilogy in the last couple of nights, one movie a night.
Yes.
And this morning I quickly watched A New Hope just because I was like, you know what, I got to do it. Got to do A New Hope just to, like, you know, pregame for this. And when I was watching the scene with Luke, you know, cleaning the droids, and just having watched Attack of the Clones two nights ago, and, you know, seeing Anakin in that room lose his crap about his, you know, his dead mother and slaughtering the Tuskens, I had such a profound respect for just seeing it again and seeing Luke also complaining in this the very same space. I don't know, like, the prequels really do enhance so much of the originals for me, and the originals enhance a lot of the prequels for me. And
right.
Now the Clone Wars have really enhanced my experience of the prequel trilogy, specifically episodes 2 and 3. And I really think that's at the end of the day, Rogue One is going to enhance the way we watch A New Hope. And my friend Greg said to me this morning, he's like, I feel like I got to watch A New Hope one more time before it's affected by Rogue One, because it's going to be affected. And that's not to say negatively, it's most likely
right.
positively, but, you know, just see what the difference might be of watching A New Hope pre Rogue One and post Rogue One. That's what's so great about what Star Wars is doing now, is it's certainly expanding our story so much. But I think, you know, having this story group at Lucasfilm is really doing their best to weave all these different mediums, all these different stories into kind of a collective whole. They all serve the bigger picture, even in their own small way. And I really like that.
Yeah, totally. They're weaving the tapestry of Star Wars in a way that's kind of in a visual way that's only really been done in a literary way before, because we're getting a lot of these fleshing outs of different things. And we've gotten that with some other franchises. And I'm thinking primarily, you know, Lord of the Rings, how Tolkien completely, like, created an entire world with histories and languages and, you know, entire cultures that came and went over the course of thousands of years. But that's all very much a literary form. We're starting to build that sort of thing with Star Wars in a visual medium. And, you know, we've got the 6, you know, core films that George Lucas did. Now we're starting to expand on those and really flesh those things out, take them into the future, you know, dig into some of the details of the past, take a look at some of these side stories with things like Clone Wars and Rebels. And it's just, we're building out from these core 6 films.
Yeah.
And you need a story group, you know, with multiple people to help guide that, figure that out. And I think so far what I've seen from them is they're doing a good job. And I hope Rogue One lives up to it.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it doesn't.
Right. Right.
But I don't know about you, Jason, but I think it's we could talk about this for the rest of the day, but you know, frankly, I know we've got a movie to go see soon.
Right. So, folks, Carl and I will be recording an initial first reaction tomorrow morning. We're probably not going to post that until Saturday, just so that some of you folks have a bit more time to see the movie before you hear our initial responses. And then we'll do, you know, a more in-depth analysis and response to the movie next week. The week after, we want your thoughts on Rogue One. So get ready to send in your emails, your comments on Facebook and Twitter. But what we really want from you guys, if you have the opportunity, please record your thoughts a minute or two at the most in an audio form so we can play them here on the show. This is a podcast. It's an audio form. We'd like to have your words coming from you personally. So if you can do that, that'd be great. And Carl, where can people send those?
Well, the audio file, the easiest thing to do would be send it to us on our email, which is wampuslarpodcast@gmail.com. Also, feel free to comment on Facebook, facebook.com/wampuslarpodcast, or shoot us follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/wampuslar.
Yes. Carl. We don't have a poll because we're going to be recording.
No. We're going to be recording tomorrow. We're going to be recording all about Rogue One moving forward. For the next couple of weeks, it's going to be all Rogue One, y'all.
Yes. I'm super excited. I cannot wait. Anything else before we wrap up this episode and go see the movie?
Just 4.5 more hours, Jason.
I hate you so much. It's 6.5 hours for me. All right. Well, that'll wrap up this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast. This has been episode number 210, Rogue One Free Show. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we'll see you after Rogue One here in the Wampus Lair.